kid asked me if we could have a recorded song because it just seemed to work well for today, and I said, of course. And could she have picked a better song for today? I don't think so. Today we are talking about the first of the agreements in the Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. And this is just probably one of the best little books you could read if you need a way to center yourself back in the way of living that best suits your spiritual life, your spiritual growth, and suits the world. So as we began to talk about this today, I thought I'd share a couple of just personal stories with you, if that's okay. Is it okay? Okay, just checking. I grew up in an era in which women didn't necessarily have a powerful voice. The ones that had a powerful voice were the outliers. They were weird, they were crazy, they were too strong, they were scary. And that's just a product of the time. There's no blame assigned because life was that way. But in what reminded me of all this is I watched a program this week that Leah recommended, so thank you, Leah, that takes place in the early 80s. And I'm looking at the hair, the workout clothes, think Jane Fonda, the decor in our homes, oh my gosh, and the way women in particular behaved. And what's so great about this program is that the main character is very compliant and very uplifting to everyone around her, but she has got an interior dialogue going on that is 180 degrees different than what she's saying. And she's very, very harsh on herself, very. But I started thinking about where I was at that time. And yeah, I had that hair, and I wore those clothes, and I decorated my house that way. Man, I hope that, you know, everything that comes back around again that becomes popular, I hope it's never shag carpet. I really don't. How did we live with cloth on the floor like that, with all those fibers to catch everything? Yuck. But I digress. The thing that was very poignant to me is that was the time of my life when I was in my 20s, in that career-building part of your life, you know, where you're out there making a name for yourself in the world and coming off of the women's movement and feminism and all that, and man, we had not come very far. All the women bosses I had just acted like men instead of acting like powerful women. And there's a big difference there. It was not pleasant. And I remembered that I was very compliant and pleasing because of my conditioning, and I didn't say no in the places I needed to say no. I didn't stand up for myself or others in the places where I needed to do that. I was taught to stand up for myself, but I wasn't taught how to do that. As a matter of fact, my earliest time of standing up for myself was when a little boy was making fun of me in the common area where the children played, where I lived in Cincinnati at the time. And this little boy would just tease me and tease me, and he was younger than me. I was 7, and he was about 5. So we're talking playground battlefield here. And I loved to stand up on the swings and swing, and he would throw rocks at me. And I got a good chunk taken out of one of my shins one time because of his rock throwing. And, you know, having a name Jill, of course, is in a popular nursery rhyme. So, I mean, that was going on just all the time. And I went home crying one day and told my mom, and she said, well, stand up for yourself. So I had one of my friends hold him, and I punched him in the nose. I punched a five-year-old in the nose. Now, talk about misguided assertiveness. And of course, it made a great impact on me that I did that, because I'm telling you this story all these years later. So I didn't know how to stand up for myself. I didn't know where to say no. I didn't know how to say no. My words were very anemic. And when they did try to come out, they came out all sideways and all wrong because I believed that I was less powerful than I was. But I started having great models for myself that I was noticing. So in my early career, I worked for the Internal Revenue Service on the taxpayer service side of things. So I helped people fill out their income tax returns, and I held seminars for small business owners on how to do their taxes for their employees and everything. So it was I was on the nice side of the IRS until I wasn't. And I did that for a little while, and then I quit. But I had an office that I worked in Fort Worth, Texas, before I spent the rest of my time in Dallas. And my boss, my supervisor, was a woman about this tall. And she had the most beautiful white hair. And her name was Maxine. Maxine Fearborn. Her name was big. Her stature was small. And Maxine was absolutely certain who she was. And she wore red lipstick with that white hair. And she smoked Herbert Territon cigarettes. Most of you, I don't think they even make those anymore. But that was when you could smoke in the office. You know, Maxine was always smoking, and she walked really, really fast. When she would go one place to another, she was moving. So one day a man came into our front desk, big guy, big. And he had on a shirt that looked like it had been underneath his pillow all night till he put it on. And he said, "I want to cash this check." And I was like, okay. And this was the first encounter that I can recall of somebody who had mental illness. So the check was made out to the people of Israel, and it was signed Jesus Christ. And it was for $1 million, and he wanted me to cash the check. And I said, that I did that for a long time. Be right back. And I went and got Maxine. So you can imagine now the picture. Tiny little white-haired Maxine walking real fast and purposeful up to the front desk, facing a guy that was about twice as big as she was. And she said very clearly, "I'm sorry, sir, we can't help you with that at this desk, but these people here are going to escort you out the front door. So thank you for coming in, and goodbye." And he was like, okay. And he let security take him out. Because Maxine spoke words of power and words of assurance that were kind and got the job done. And I remember, here I was, 23 years old, I think, standing in awe of Maxine because she wasn't afraid of his stature, his state of mind, what he was there for. She wasn't afraid for her physical health. And she took care of business. So of course, here we are, 43 years later. And I'm telling you this story because it made such an impact on me to watch somebody stand in their power authentically and say what needed to be said. Now, I'm going to say, I don't know when Maxine came into her full power, but I know that doing that for myself as a woman in society has taken a few decades to do that. And it's not always fun. It's sometimes a little bit scary to say what you mean and to mean what you say and to be able to stand behind your word and be able to take whatever the consequences are from speaking your truth. Now, I don't always speak it as well as I would like to. Comes out a little sideways sometimes. Comes out in a way that I wish had not been delivered in the way that it was. But what comes with the power of speaking your word and speaking your truth is the ability to live with the consequences of doing it. And to be able to stand there, if there's pushback, to be able to stand there if you need to make amends to someone, to be able to stand in that same truth and speak those words as well. Or to say, I meant what I said. I really did. And I'll stand here with you while you process whatever you're feeling about what I said. I'll stand right here with you. So there's a great deal of spiritual strength that comes to us when we're able to do that. And it's not just about the words where we need to stand our ground. It's about extending also authentic words of kindness, respect, support, and vulnerability. It requires us to listen, sort it out, respond. Have you ever been around someone who didn't feel the need to say a lot of words and they were peaceful in their silence? I know a couple of people in this room that do that, and it is marvelous. It's a little strange at first because we're used to filling up our spaces with words. I am in the business of words. But sometimes our impeccable word is our silence. And a lot of times that silence leads us to speaking words that are more thoughtful, more purposeful than the ones that we might have blurted out as a reaction. Jan did our meditation today from the throat chakra, and it's no accident that we have this beautiful organ here in our skull that works with all of our thoughts, that sorts things out. And for better or worse, it is a good working system that we have here. But we have also this part of us. And you know how it feels here in your whole torso when you've landed on a truth, when you know something is real, when you know something is authentic. And so it's no accident that physiologically we're built that between here and here is here. This very dynamic power center from which we speak. I know that when I am tense, angry, upset, fearful, my vocal cords get tighter, my voice gets higher, and it gets harder to breathe through my words. When I'm speaking words that are authentic and true, they come from a whole different pitch. They come from a whole different relaxation of the vocal cords. But I want to also address, have you ever watched people who have a hearing disability argue with each other? Have you ever seen that in American Sign Language? You know exactly what they're saying. You don't have to hear a thing. And I was thinking as I was putting this talk together, I was thinking about people who communicate with sign language. I was thinking about how purposeful they are about it. I keep using that word purposeful, and there's a purpose for that. When I, my great-grandmother was deaf, and so when I was a child, I learned some rudimentary sign language to be able to communicate with her, and I got used to the strangeness of watching and hearing a deaf person communicate with me. So when I was older, I took an ASL course at the junior college up in Tarrant County, and the first thing our teacher taught us were the signs for the bad words, so that we wouldn't mistakenly do something we weren't supposed to do and, you know, unwittingly offend someone. So I thought about how people who use sign language to communicate are very deliberate about what they say. And I know that it becomes, it's as automatic to them as speaking out loud is to us. So I'm not saying that they don't have reactions. I'm just saying that it's a different way of thinking about it. What if you had to think about communicating with your hands instead of speaking with your mouth? Wouldn't you have a different way of approaching life? So I'm just throwing that out there as a way for your brain to go, that's an interesting way to look at it. So in the book, The Four Agreements, the first one is to be impeccable with your word, and I want to define for you what impeccable means. It means without sin. It means without sin. So impeccable comes from a Latin word that means sin, and the M in the word means without, and the peccatus means sin. So without sin. So when you're impeccable, you take responsibility for your actions. You speak words that are true, but you don't judge or blame yourself when you take responsibility for what you say and do. It's without sin. You're not holding it against yourself. That's the greatest sin of all, isn't it? The judgments we have against ourselves. So here's... Here's not using our word against ourselves. When we speak badly about somebody else, we're not hurting them. We're hurting ourselves because we are not speaking from a place of love and truth. And the intention behind it is everything. Yes? So try this. If I said, oh, bless your heart. Do you get compassion from that? Do you get empathy? But if I said, well, bless your heart. That's a Southern way of saying a whole lot of other stuff. Those three little words, bless your heart. The intention behind them is everything. And so be careful how you bless somebody's heart. If you're going to bless their heart, really bless it, or else don't bother. Because what happens is you're setting yourself up to get hurt back because you've created an opening there that is less than loving. And so other people's less than loving words are going to come back and hit you in that vulnerable place. That's good enough reason right there not to talk badly about others, especially to harm another person, to hurt them, to tap into their place of vulnerability and make them believe something about themselves that isn't true. How many of you got a message about yourself when you were younger that you discovered is not true about you? Can I just have a show of hands? You know, I was a very inquisitive child. I'm sure y'all are having trouble imagining that. But I was a very inquisitive child. I questioned a lot of stuff. And I was encouraged to ask questions, except when I was told not to. Yeah. Ooh, especially if I didn't agree with something one of my parents was doing. I mean, I love my daddy to this day, but I was not invited to question my dad about anything until I became an independent person and could speak my truth and agree to disagree with him and to hold that line where I needed to. And I remember the first time my dad said something to me as an adult, I just said, "It's not okay for you to say that, Dad. That's not okay with me. I know you meant something else, so let's try that." My heart was pounding. My face was hot. And it took some practice until my dad and I had an evolving relationship in which we could speak words of truth with kindness to each other. I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful that before my dad left this life, he and I had that with each other. And we had a great deal of respect for each other despite any differences we had. And of course we would have differences. He was from a different generation, a different gender, a different parenthood. Everything. But we respected each other because we listened for each other's truth. And that's the gift we can give each other. To be able to speak a truth without fear. Jesus said something along the lines of, be either hot or cold. If you're lukewarm, remember how the rest of it goes? I'll spit you out. Do you ever get expecting a nice cold drink of water out of the tap? And somebody had the hot water on, so you get warm water instead of cold? Bleh. So this is what we're doing, and it requires us to be conscious all the time, all the time, all the time. Sorry, that's your homework. Just take a moment to reflect on your words. Yesterday, I had to run some errands in Austin, and I was dismayed at the number of people that were walking around unmasked. I was masked. And the word in me that wanted to rise up was to say, what is wrong with you people? Put your mask on. Well, first of all, it's not my place to do that. That's something they're going to decide. And if I'm going to talk to anybody about masking, that isn't the way to do it. But I discovered as I went along through the day that people were just irritating me, and I went home. Because it was better to go home and not finish up what I needed to do than to be out there in the world being cranky and at risk of saying something that would harm another person. None of us have any idea what kind of day other people are having. None of us have any idea what the makeup of that person is. And so it's best for us to err on the side of kindness or, at the very least, withdrawing. We can do that because we cannot go out there slinging our words around like arrows and stones. We cannot because it hurts us. It hurts us. Kit is going to be teaching this book on Wednesday nights. I hope that you will join her starting this Wednesday for the Zoom class. If you're impeccable with your word, if you're without sin, then it means you're using your energy in the direction of truth and love for yourself. For yourself. And others maybe get the benefit of it. I love the way Don Miguel Ruiz talks about in our human interactions, we sometimes cast spells on each other with our words. And I love the way he talks about casting spells and black magic. Don't freak out. Don't freak out anybody online. This is not a Wiccan community, although we do welcome them. So The worst form of casting spells and using our words incorrectly into black magic is gossip. He says, gossip is black magic at its very worst because it is pure poison. We learned how to gossip by agreement. When we were children, we heard the adults around us gossiping all the time, openly giving their opinions about other people. They even had opinions about people they didn't know. Emotional poison was transferred along with the opinions, and we learned this as a normal way to communicate. It's become the main form of communication in human society, and you've seen it, and you know what it's doing to us. It's become the way we feel close to each other because it makes us feel better to see someone else feel as badly as we do. Misery-loving company and all that jazz. Using the analogy of the human mind as a computer, gossip can be compared to a computer virus. It's a piece of computer language written in the same language as all the other codes, but with a harmful intent. I love this comparison. It's inserted into the program of your computer when you least expect it, and most of the time without your awareness or knowledge, and after it's introduced, your computer doesn't work quite right or it doesn't function at all because the codes get all mixed up. There's so many conflicting messages that it stops producing good results. Wow. So I have a big shocking fact to share with you. Gossip happens in churches. Oh my God. It happens in churches. Do you know why it happens in churches? Do you want the story? I almost sat down here on the steps. I'm not going to do it, Taylor. You're good. But I almost sat down on the steps so we could have, like, you know, fireside chat. It happens in churches because we get here and we love the feeling that we get being with each other, and we let our guard down and the best of us comes out and we feel that closeness, and then we start reverting back to the place where we had our very first closeness, which was our families, and then we start doing what our families did. And it just feels so comfortable because we're at church, but we're also nice people. We're nice people. We bless people's hearts. And so we're nice people. So instead of saying, you know, when you did that, it really made me feel upset, we go to somebody else because we're nice and we say, I didn't want to tell this person, but they really upset me when they did this. And then their friend the friend they talked to goes, somebody else, and goes, do you know what I heard? I heard that so-and-so did this, but don't say anything. And then that person goes to somebody else, and they tell the story just a little bit different. By that time, the very first offense has become a tangled web of, ugh. Oh. And it is poison. It is poison in an organization. It is poison in a place like a church, a spiritual community, where people need to feel safe. In a place where people want to be their authentic selves, you wouldn't be sitting here and listening if you weren't that person. But gossip is part of the human condition, and we have to do everything we can to put an end to it. And I did happen to notice when I was reading about a comparison to a computer virus. So what's going on right now in our larger world? A virus. I only go so far with cause and effect. But I started wondering, what if? What if this outward virus is a manifestation or a symptom of the inner virus that is spreading in our society with judgments and disregard for each other and violence with our words and actions that we've seen accelerate and accelerate and accelerate? And this pandemic has put us on a petri dish as a culture. Didn't mean to make a pun there, but I kind of did. We're in a petri dish. And man, are we going to produce something good out of that that benefits humanity? Or are we going to turn it into something really ugly that hurts everyone? I can't ignore that comparison. So, you know, you've heard Kit and me talk about this for 18 months now, longer, maybe years, that we are in the midst of a huge change, in a sea change for all of us. We're in the midst of it right now. We're choosing up sides, whether we're going to stand on the side of truth and kindness and goodness and authentic power, or are we going to stand on the side of our lowest common denominator? I choose the first. And oh man, I've done it now. I've said it out loud. I've said it out loud in front of people, therefore I must live it. Dang. You do too. You do too. You have to choose. And where you hear gossip going on, do not participate. Whether it's here, whether it's in your family, stop it. I have a friend who is so good at it. If I get started on something like that, they just don't say anything back. And I get to hear the echo of my own voice. Bam. Then I have to stand there and live with what I've done to energy and what I've done to myself. Ugh. It's no wonder. It is no wonder that people fall away from a spiritual path. They come back, we'll fall away because this is work. It is work. But we're not alone. We have this in us that calls us to the highest and best. We have that. We have that which calls us to impeccability. My goodness, friends, if you aren't being kind to others and kind to yourself, start now. Start now. Give yourself that gift. I've lost my place. Okay. So just do not cast spells on others and do not open yourself to the spells they might cast. If you have impeccability in your word, he says it will give you immunity from anyone putting a negative spell on you. You will only receive a negative idea if your mind is fertile ground for that idea. When you become impeccable with your word, your mind is no longer fertile ground for words to come from black magic. So, why don't we just reflect upon that for a moment? Let these tones call you into that place from which impeccability is born. It's already there. There is that in you which longs for its perfect expression in thought, word, and action. It longs for it. It's why it hurts us when we are less than that, and forgiving when we are less than that. Beloved, for today, can you live in impeccability? Can you live in impeccability of your word? You don't have to make the decision for a lifetime. Make it just for today. Tomorrow you can start over, and the day after that you can start over, and on and on. Watch yourself. If you feel your emotions rising and you begin a sentence with "they," because it's not about them, it's about us. Remember that the master teachers, especially the example that we follow of Jesus, it was all about giving people a vision of themselves that they'd never had before. It was about showing them that they had a partnership with the divine, and that they were very instruments and expressions of that same divine. And that is what we are about. If you have spoken words that have hurt another and therefore yourself, will you just take a moment, you can place your hand on your heart if you want, and forgive yourself for your unknowing in that moment? Can you know that in that moment, if you could have done better, you would have? And our living amends to ourselves is our desire, our impulse to do better. Make sure you're breathing. Make sure that the story you tell yourself about yourself and others is honest, without judgment. Make sure that if you say something, you follow it through. Above all, do you feel right now that God is among us and within us? The Holy Spirit, the activity of God, flowing through all of us right now, whether we're in this room, whether we're watching now or later. And that light drives out the darkness. This is something that we can claim and hold on to. That light and love win. Beloved, even now, the seeds are planted in you to be more conscious, day after day, starting with now, to live and speak that which is honorable, that which is forthright, that which is kind, that which is authentic to us. So as you go forth in your day and in all the days ahead, your burden is lifted because you're letting go of the sins of the past, those things that we did in our unknowing, those things that we did that harmed us, letting it go, just letting it go. And above all, beloved, remember that the great Creator, the great Spirit in all, judges you not, sees not the mistake. Sees only the unfolding of perfection in you. And so be at peace. Be at peace. And may your days be soft and true and clear. May your days be free of judgment and condemnation for yourself or any other. And may the light be known to you now and always, and so it is. Amen.